Hello and welcome to the latest episode of QSR Uncut. I'm your host, Danny Klein, the editorial director here at QSR. And so, you know, sometimes when we do record episodes, I will say to the guests, we should revisit this in the year. And then it's one of those things where we both say it, we both agree, and then it never actually happens. But in this case, it is actually the case. So, Jen Curran, just want to say thank you again for joining us. And as a quick refresher to anybody who might not remember what we talked about last time, we went through what was then the 2023 Q State of Digital Report. So actually this very morning that we're recording this, which is Wednesday, the 6th of March, the 2024 edition came out. So very timely. Definitely a lot of things to get into. Jen, I will really quickly just open the floor to you if you want to tell everybody about your role. Maybe give a little bit of background into the report. As we were talking offline, this is the fifth year, so very cool that it's been continuing and to grow and come out there. So yeah, thanks for joining. I'll just introduce yourself to everybody, and we'll take it from there.
Great. Thank you so much, Danny. Well, it's such an honor and pleasure to be here with you again. I'm glad that we stuck to our word and we're coming back for another year. And also fabulous to meet you in person recently at the World Conference. So I'm Jen Curran. I'm the CMO here at Q. At Q, we say we are the company going beyond POS into the unified commerce platform, which is all about omnichannel ordering and fulfillment along the food journey. So we're very passionate about going beyond, you know, what used to be known as the POS on the counter and into a data-driven universe. We focus only on fast casual and QSR brands. So this is our bread and butter. As you mentioned, this is our fifth annual State of Digital. And it encompasses more than digital, by the way, but it's mostly to really track the trends in digital. And having been able to look back now across 5 years of doing this report, I was able to really see some eye-opening things. I mean, the industry has been through so much. So the first year we did this, it's based on a survey that goes out to fast casual and QSR operators with over 20 locations in the United States. And that survey, it's, you know, all voluntary and it's anonymous. Every year we increase our participation. This year we had 179 unique brands that represent 62,000 locations in the United States participate. So the data is from those brands. And we've just seen like really interesting things. I mean, the first year we did it, it was pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then we did, you know, two or three kind of in the pandemic, coming out of the pandemic. And we're really seeing some of these trends kind of take hold. So, and then there's new things every year that we notice. So I'm really excited to get into it, share it with your listeners. And I'd love to hear what your takeaways are too, Danny.
Yeah, it's interesting to, you know, I think you probably agree if we went back to 2019 and we were talking about digital trend reports, it was a lot of what restaurants weren't doing, or at least about what they wanted to do.
Right.
And then I would have conversations with operators about all these cool things. And, you know, it's kind of like this conversation of, yeah, that sounds great. How much is it going to cost? And yeah, we'll probably work on it. It might come out 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. That is not how it works anymore.
Right.
So now you get into something and within 3 weeks, it's there. I think that's one of the good upsides about kind of the changes. But, you know, one thing that we did last year, I think we should do this again, is just kind of go through these six trends to watch. I am going to, in this case, though, I want to go a little bit out of order. Okay. And I want to start with number two, which is on kiosks, because I think that's such a fascinating kind of corner of what's happening in technology right now. Because I would say, you know, pre-COVID, again, through that window, it was like McDonald's was sort of the main one that we talked about doing it. Mm-hmm. And then during COVID, it was like, do people want to touch the screen? Because, you know, we had no idea how you even contracted these things.
Right.
And now, though, I mean, to the point that you can kind of run through what you found, but everyone that you talk to now in this space is looking into it, you know, whether or not they're going to do it, they're going to at least think about it. So yeah, tell us what you saw there and kind of how that pulls.
Yeah, well, I actually looked back across the years because you'll see this trend. We titled it Kiosks Make a Comeback. And I feel like kiosks, like you're describing, they've been on a bit of a roller coaster these last 5 years. So when I came into the industry, in 2018, 2019, they were kind of hot. Like people were talking about kiosks, and that's probably around the time McDonald's started implementing their kiosks. And then they kind of dipped. And then the pandemic, there was a little bit of a resurgence, like, oh, we're interested in kiosks. And then there was another dip because, like you said, people were like, do we want people touching the screens and then other people touching the screens? And that sounds like really germy. And this year, we were kind of – this was one of our biggest takeaways. We were kind of blown out of the water to see that 44% of brands that took the survey said they are looking into adding kiosks as a new ordering channel in 2024. Yeah. So almost half – of the 179 brands, 62,000 locations are looking into kiosks. And it was pretty equally distributed across fast casual and QSR. And so it really has been, you know, the up and down bumpiness. Now, it's pretty clear to us and to me that there's two reasons for this. One, digital has taken hold and has kind of stuck. And when I say digital, I'm talking about self-service, right? Being able to place your order your way, whether it's on your device, on a website, on a kiosk, but self-service ordering preferences for guests now have pretty much, they're here to stay. It's not going to go away. And so people have gotten more comfortable with any kind of self-service ordering. And the second piece of it is labor. So labor has continued to plague restaurants. It's just so difficult not only to find the people, but to keep them. And then you have the wage increases going on. Particularly in California, right? So you put those two things together and kiosk all of a sudden starts making a heck of a lot of sense. I mean, and then the third leg of that stool is kiosks are showing higher check averages, higher ticket sizes. So we're starting to run that data across our customers and we're seeing anywhere from 10 to 30%. You know, Shake Shack boasts 30%. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing, you know, there's more opportunities for cross-sell and promotion. If you have the customer-facing display, you can put, you know, LTOs and use that screen for marketing. So those are all the reasons that we believe kiosks are making a comeback. And that's what the data told us as well.
Yeah, I remember talking to Shake Shack in kind of the early stages of this, and mm-hmm. they're now rolled out, I believe, to every location. Mm-hmm. And they did that, you know, within a year, I believe, because mm-hmm. again, they saw the same things that you're talking about. But I remember walking into a location that had just opened by us, which was a pretty exciting thing because we don't have a lot of QSRs over here. But anyway, so I walked in and everybody was at the kiosk and nobody was at the counter. So I just walked right past the kiosk and then I ordered at the counter. And it was just, right. You know, I think in this specific case, people, it was two things. It was one, you know, people didn't realize you could do both.
Right.
But more importantly, they just gravitated toward that technology.
Yeah.
Because I think I remember years ago, they kind of tried it, but it was almost in a cashless type of environment. And it wasn't really overly popular enough mm-hmm. to the point where they're going to kind of roll it through. Mm-hmm. But now it just seems to me that the way that so many people order mobily, they kind of like that experience in all aspects of their lives, mm-hmm. even walking inside of a retail environment, you know, it's like you go to Macy's, you check your price on the counter thing. It's just such a better, more Amazon-like thing to kind of mirror what you do.
Well, it's fascinating, right? I mean, our behavior in terms of how we order is really changing, no matter what generation we're in, right? Like I used to watch my son who always would gravitate toward, I would walk into like our favorite smoothie bowl place, South Block here locally. He would go right to the kiosk. I'd go right to the counter, you know. But now I could go to a kiosk, you know, as well. Like it's not that I didn't want to use the kiosk, but I prefer kind of just to go right to the counter. I remember when you were just talking, Dan, I remember Honeygrown. Are you familiar with that brand? I think they were one of the first ones that came out, like kiosk only.
Right. Yeah. They had that model, or they still have that model where, you would watch the people make your food, but you didn't actually talk to them.
So, right. Right.
But it worked really well for them on the kind of the labor line front.
Right.
And,
but to your point in the up and down of the kiosk, like in the pandemic, when it was becoming more popular at first, we kind of doubled down here at Q and we created a new product that's a POS and a kiosk in one. So it flips. So that helps with the staffing internally, so that they can actually, people can jump on the make line if they need to and just turn the POS around and you know, punch a code and it becomes a kiosk. Yeah. So we did some things like that in the pandemic, and now we're finding that customers, particularly those in California, are really liking that. Like that's the way they want to go, because it can be either or. Yeah.
So this is the final point I'll make on kiosks, mm-hmm. because we could probably talk about this the entire time.
Yeah.
And there are five other trends here, but one thing I think is interesting, or maybe kind of, you know, understate, is that a lot of fast casuals and QSRs, I see this at Cava sometimes near my house, is that, you know, some of those employees, you know, they didn't begin working until the COVID era, so to speak. And so they're not really overly engaging one-to-one, you know, like it's, and it's not really, this is true of a lot of younger employees. Yeah. I talk about my younger brother sometimes, who's 19, but the element of like delivering customer service at the point, you know, as much as a lot of brands want to talk about it, Cava's better at it than most. There are a lot of employees who would rather you put them on the digital make line and they could just put their headphones on and kind of put their head down and just make bowls all day. And it's not, and yeah, it's a problem in some cases, but it's also, you're being a little bit delusional if you're not going to acknowledge that it exists. And so in some cases, your kiosk is probably going to be a lot better at delivering customer experience than a human being would be, as wild as that sounds. And I think in the case of Shake Shack and some other brands, they're finding that, because it upsells, it shows you the full breadth of the menu. You can have colorful designs or whatever, you know, and it's a little bit different than trying to rely on somebody who might be a digital native type of person who may not smile at somebody if they walk in the door. So I think that's, you know, maybe less granular than like the cost and all that stuff that we talk about with kiosks, but no less a reality of kind of where it might be, say 3, 4, or 5 years from now. And you've got, you know, Gen Alpha, whatever that is, you know, serving people. So something to think about.
It's definitely sobering. It makes me a little sad, because I'm a big advocate of hospitality. And there's some brands that do it. Like Honeygrow, they have an ambassador, right? So while people are there, they'll have someone like friendly. But you're right. Like, I've seen the same thing. Like, most of the folks don't really want to talk to you.
Yeah, even McDonald's has the ambassador. Or at least they used to back when they first started doing that. You'd have some kind of walking around. Because I remember my dad used to try to hit the buttons and it was just a disaster. So it's like, you know, you had the one employee kind of in there. But anyway, let's now scale back to what was the number one trend on here, which is fewer swings and surprises in digital sales. So let's just start by telling us what does that mean exactly?
Right. Well, I don't think this is a huge shocker to anyone. We put it first because we have been tracking digital mix, you know, the digital sales as a percentage of the whole for the past 5 years. And we saw so many spikes, obviously, in the pandemic. Everyone ran out and got their online ordering. We were going all digital for months. And then it started to level off last year. It's still continuing to rise, but it's a slower, more incremental rise. So digital is taking over more, you know, as the percentage of the mix, but it's now in a predictable pattern. I think this is good news for restaurant operators. Like, it's more manageable. So you should be able to look at your entire portfolio and all your orders and be able to say, okay, digital is going to be this much percent. Let's build strategies around that. I'm not saying it's predictable, like in terms of timing and seasonality, that's still really hard. But in terms of looking at your entire mix, it's settling in. At the we saw 42% in the 26 to 50% category. And what that means is almost half of brands are achieving 26 to 50% digital sales as part of their whole. Yeah. This is about a 10% increase from last year. So we see more brands are pushing up into that category. They're getting out of the 0 to 10. Now the difference is interesting to me between fast casual and QSR, because fast casual, we know, is a little bit faster to adopt all digital, is a little bit earlier in the game. And they're 50%, squarely 50% are in that 26 to 50 category. So half of them. In QSR, the largest portion is in the 11 to 25%. QSR is going to start, they're starting to catch up. Like they're getting pretty digital savvy now too, but they were a little bit behind, and the guests are a little bit behind too in QSR.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of why I would think that might be. And I think maybe one of this is
drive
probably
through.
Not, yeah, drive through. Yes. Yeah. That's probably the by far the number one reason.
Yeah.
And I would say number two is there are a lot of QSRs in America who struggle with the connectivity of their actual brick and mortars themselves. I mean, I remember talking to someone years ago, and this sort of legacy brand is like they couldn't do delivery because they just didn't have Wi-Fi, like all these kind of rural spots that they were located in. And they didn't really care because they were like, yeah, all our 80% of our business comes through the drive-through is fine. We don't have to mess with those kind of worlds. But I think if you're fast casual, generally speaking, much newer models, built within probably the last 15 years at the most, and so they're a little bit better set up and their consumer bases are skewing younger and things of that nature. But to your point, I think that conversation is not going stagnant on the QSR side. They're just not, you can't continue to have no Wi-Fi forever.
Right.
Maybe some places in this country, but yeah, I think if we do this conversation 5 years from now, I bet that's like 75 and 50 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which, yeah, is kind of scary, but also a good opportunity.
Right. Well, there are a lot of brands out there talking about getting to 100% digital, which, and there's tech companies saying that too. I mean, I think it depends on the brand, right? But I think we're a little ways out from that.
I know. When I heard Firehouse say that the other day, that really caught me off guard. I never would have thought that would have happened, but then when they just want to, on a point two there, they just want to take all the counters out and put kiosks in.
Back to kiosk.
Yeah. And so I was like, I guess that makes sense. I don't really feel like I was missing out going in there and ordering differently, but just kind of a wild thing to even think. They want to do it within a year or two, I guess, probably more like two, but still, that 100% thing, Wingstop probably head there someday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows where it goes?
Back to the QSR and drive-thru. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of innovation in the drive-thru though. Like I think about my own behavior at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And if I'm a couple miles away and I can pull over, I'm not saying I'm driving while I'm doing this. I would never say that. And can place my order and can pick it up in the drive-thru, it actually works really well. Like the lines around their drive-thru are always insane, but that mobile pickup, I mean, now is that digital or is that mobile? You get into that, but I mean, it's kind of more of it's a mobile order with a drive-thru pickup.
Yeah. I think we're headed toward a drive-thru world that you either have that option and you're kind of incentivized toward it, obviously by giving some data and what have you. Mm-hmm. Or you're just in a situation like you see at Chick-fil-A where you're kind of willing to wait a little bit. They take your order really quickly, which then allows you to just check your phone for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. But if the accuracy is good and the customer experience is good, people in the kind of the younger generations, this is from survey data that we do all the time on the drive-thru report in October, that people perceive that to be kind of fast, even though it isn't. So you can win in that world too now if you're just, your technology works and your food is good and you're accurate and you're friendly. Mm-hmm. Or you could give someone that ability to take that other road like you're mentioning there. I don't know that anyone could just be fast all the way through anymore. Because your quality, your accuracy, all these things suffer. And people who are 19, they just don't look at it the way that people used to when they're popping off the highway and trying to get in and out in 2 minutes and eating terrible food and being okay with it.
So it's
just a different world.
Well, I think AI is going to have an impact as well in the drive-thru.
Yeah, for sure. And beyond just the voice ordering, apparently there is the ability to make that sound like Santa Claus, someone told me recently. Is anyone asking for that? Probably not. I've never seen that. So number three is loyalty 3.0 emerges. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of 3.0 things. I one time had a story called Fast Casual 3.0, and then I got a text message of someone kind of making fun of me. But I enjoy the 3.0 concept. So tell us what that means and what you all found.
Well, I have to give a shout out to Dina McKinley, who encouraged me to use the 3.0 reference because of Web 3.0. Listen, loyalty to me, we've seen this coming. It needs a makeover. It's just, we're still in punch card mentality. We're still in buy 10, get one free mentality. And I just don't think it's sustainable. And it's just, we have all these tech tools now. I mean, talk about AI and data-driven platforms, that there's so much more we could be doing in loyalty. And the data really said that. So one of our findings is that only 20% of the respondents said they're not looking to upgrade, change, or improve their loyalty strategies, whether that's technology or they're just their strategies and approaches. So 80% overall are looking to change their loyalty, do it better, do it differently, implement new strategies. Of the top strategies was, the number one was something called experience engagement, which is a term from the CEO at Freebirds introduced me to. And I was just, when I heard it, I was like, okay, I think I know what that is, but what do you think that is? And experience engagement is kind of what we were just talking about is lacking, right? Experience engagement is like surprising, delighting your guest, and giving them an experience and bringing them into your club, almost like the swag, like all the stuff, right? To make them real ambassadors of your brand. So experience engagement was number one. Frictionless sign up was number two. So make it easy for people to get into the rewards program. You're in line, you made your order, put your phone number in. That's it, done, right? Don't make them download an app and do all this stuff, right? And then the third thing was guest payment variety. There were other strategies like facial recognition and things like that, but those were the top three, along with finding a new technology provider. But you combine this with the move towards a platform environment and a platform ecosystem in restaurants, which I define, you know, pretty basic as API friendly, open, collaborative, right? And systems are able to share the data so you can truly get to that one source of data. So a data-driven platform is how I would reference it, with open, easy APIs. I don't want to say everything's open API, but API ease. So you combine those two things, and it's like there's so many opportunities for loyalty to be different, to be better than it is today.
Yeah, I love the experience concept that you mentioned there, especially in full service. I know we're kind of focused on QSR here, but to me, any full service restaurant loyalty program that I'm a part of, it has to revolve around that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really overly interested in the idea of like a free appetizer, because you know, the frequency and full service is just not that high. I mean, we don't go to those places all that often. But what is cool is when it's something like, you know, I want to be the first to know, you know, that you're doing like a specialty wine dinner on March 24th and I'm only invited because I'm in this group or whatever.
Right, right.
And that to me is the key. And the swag in QSR, I'm lucky enough to have a lot of it.
I bet you do.
And I love all of it. I mean, I wear this Chick-fil-A hoodie I have that's got like this waffle fry heart on it all the time, you know, and it's like I'm an ambassador for the industry because this is where I work. But to get your consumers to kind of, you know, just, you know, it's almost like if you look back many years ago and Starbucks was all about like, let me carry that cup around, right? You know, and then that kind of, you know, obviously it's been a lot of years and a lot of different things, but you can really lean into that world now in so many ways. So yeah, I think that's such a great point. And then, you know, and I'm sure you saw this, and, you know, the idea of surprise and delight, I think, is really cool. The experiences, I think what you see people moving away from now is surprise and delight with free menu items when you don't know what you're actually getting and then you don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Caribou does a really good job of this, where it's like, you know, let you pick kind of the thing that you get into that tier of loyalty for. Starbucks also kind of pioneered that, where it was like, let's rise up the VIP tiers, you know, and then the higher you get, the different dynamic points are worth. Like a Chick-fil-A, if you're in that highest level loyalty, this amount of points gets you 30 nuggets instead of a sandwich or whatever.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think your point about 3.0 in here is very much true, because it's changing. And then also how brands even measure that engagement is changing and what actually means a loyal user and so on and so forth. It's an exciting time.
It is. There's a lot of opportunity there. Listen, there's a lot of opportunity there right now. I do agree with you. And I was thinking about it earlier when you were talking about the lack of engagement at a lot of fast casuals and QSRs. I was thinking full service, right? Like I think it is heading there quite heavily. And I think again of my son's generation, I have, you know, one millennial and one Gen Z essentially like on the cusp. And they just love that. Like they'll pay for a really nice dinner, but they want that experience. Right. But I don't think fast casuals and QSR can ignore it. I think they still need to really be mindful about it. And to your point of swag, I love a good swag, right? like surprise and delight me with like, let me pick from, you know, one of your cool swag items. And we see like Sweetgreen and other, you know, brands coming out with those, even smaller brands. You know, I was at Dig last night for dinner and they opened a new location here in Bethesda and the whole one wall was their swag. I don't know how many locations, I think they're like 20 or 30. But it's not a bad strategy.
No, I mean, clean juice by me, you walk in, it's all over the wall. First watch is the same.
Yeah.
I did not know you lived in Bethesda though. I was actually there right after the conference. I went to visit my brother who lives in Potomac.
Yeah. Our office is here. Come visit us.
Yeah, I had no idea. I like that area. It seems like there's just so many people.
Yeah.
I went to Target and it was like, you know, it was like three stories and you had to park in this garage that they built just for Target. It was kind of insane. But
yeah, we moved out of the city, but that's for another podcast.
Yeah, the overcrowding of the Washington DMA.
But, yeah.
All right, so number four, post-pandemic tech favors platforms. So. Yes. What is that?
Okay. Well, where to start here? Oh, so many things. this is something we've been tracking. So when we first started doing this survey, we were curious from a more self-serving perspective, obviously, as a, you know, as a player in the POS field that's trying to go beyond POS, we were curious about the proclivity of restaurants to gravitate towards this platform approach, which when we say platform, again, we have multiple different products that are all ordering and kitchen products within one platform and one software architecture philosophy. And so the data is native to the platform. The menu is created. It's native menu data in our platform. There are a lot of platforms out there, though. There are CDPs, there are CRMs. There's a lot of companies saying platform. So I think it's, you know, at a risk of being overused a little bit. But we've been tracking this for 5 years. And what we saw coming out of the pandemic is a real desire for consolidation. So what happened in the pandemic is companies went out and bought tons of new technology, a lot of widgets, a lot of really specific things, not putting any of them down. But then what do you have? You have sort of this leaning tower of Pisa, right? It's very untenable, unmanageable. The data isn't, you know, depending on how the APIs are working, they may not be compatible. The data is not being shared. And the ultimate goal of efficiency and getting to the single source of truth, one profile of the guest, is very difficult. So this year, we saw that 65% of respondents, which is about what it was last year too, are saying they're looking to move to a more cohesive, holistic platform for their omnichannel ordering or for their data, right? Yeah. So that's interesting. We're still seeing within our space, fast casual and QSR, there's probably about 30% still in legacy, like non-cloud systems, which is a little bit staggering. I mean, they're slowly moving over, right? But we're seeing that it's becoming a bigger priority than it has been in past years when they were getting a lot of the widgets and the bells and whistles that they needed to keep their business humming.
Yeah, that all of that is so true. Anytime I talk to someone, it's that unified solutions concept is very top of mind. And, you know, I think for people like yourselves, trying to answer that call is really just a massive opportunity right now. I remember I did, you know, we used to do this, or we still do it, but just not me. But we have a next gen council, we call it, which is, you know, 10 full service operators, again, into that world for a second, And, you know, we do these hour long calls quarterly, mm-hmm. and they just talk to each other. I didn't really say much, but we did one on technology one time, and I would say more than half of them probably were like, look, I got to just start by saying I'm embarrassed about which POS system I use. because it's like, yeah, we're on this legacy, but we know we shouldn't be. And, you know, we're thinking about getting off it, but we have franchisees to consider and, you know, the so on and so forth. And so it's definitely stirring there in the background of a lot of people, but to your kind of number there about how many people aren't doing it, it's actually still, although you would think we're pretty far along in this journey, we're really not. So in the next few years, it's going to really change. A lot of chance for much better data, and then again for companies like you to just to play a role in this this journey of making or running better restaurants that you would think everyone's doing it, but they're not.
Right.
I guess that's where I'm going with that.
Yeah. Well, and it all comes down to efficiency in restaurant operations. Like, our goal is to help your restaurant run more efficiently. I mean, that's what I think all of our goals are, right? And so if the bottom line, you're trying to help the restaurant run more efficiently, you have to, you know, take a look at your technical debt, you know, how much technology you actually own. What is the cost of that technology? Do you have ROI on your technology? People don't think POS is ROI. We have an ROI calculator and we have it across our whole platform because we're trying to change the construct and the thinking that there's actually a way to use software that drives, you know, cost savings, revenue lift, and labor efficiencies, right? And, you know, that's a new construct for people because typically POS is seen as, like you said, like there's just so much that goes, it's very complicated to make a change. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's like almost looked at as a sunk cost. But I think it's interesting to look at the way that these trends are kind of threading together, which is something I, you know, looking at it with new eyes with you right now, you know, the predictability in the digital, right, the portion of digital sales is now opening up time and attention for restaurants to think more holistically about their operations and what they're doing, P&L, margin production, you know, all these things. And that's why I think platforms is now all of a sudden, you know, there was the old age, like best in class versus all in one, you know, it's like, well, it's really, I mean, we would lean more towards best in class, but it's really neither. It's really like have your ecosystem, you know, cohesive, easier said than done.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like what we were talking about the drive-through before. It's like that that best in class or all in one. Now you have to be all in one and best in class.
Yeah,
just can't. There's just too much parity in the marketplace now in technology. Right. You know, you can't just be good at. I mean, you can, but I would say that in the case where you offer a lot of different things, you still also have to be good at all those little different pieces versus just offering them. You know, delivery is not still a messy space, but that's one good example because it was just like the sheer novelty of the ability to use it back in the day was enough to sustain at least consumers tapping it, whether or not it was profitable. But now, you know, there's so many restaurants have white label apps that aggregators can't just give you a bad experience because they're offering something new.
Right.
But anyhow, number five, tech companies need to step up with AI solutions. So when I was in Chicago last year, AI, I feel like it was hitting the like peak of buzz that now suddenly pricing is. But yeah, I'm not surprised to see that on there. I think it's a very interesting topic. I'm a big believer in AI on the back end. You know, maybe not the kind of really exciting robotic avocado cutting thing, you know, that Chipotle is doing. That'll obviously not work for everybody, but AI to streamline, you know, some of the things that are going on with inventory and so forth, definitely going to happen. So yeah, tell us about that, what you all found. And
yeah, this one is so interesting. I mean, to me, because AI, just like you said, it's got so much buzz last year. It was like all the talk. And I had this originally titled, Danny, AI is largely wait and see was my original title for it. Yeah. because a lot of people are talking about it. And we have some of these focus groups as well, where we bring operators in and we just listen, like you were saying. And they're all saying like, yeah, everyone's talking about it. Our investors, our CEOs, our board, they all want us looking at it. We don't want to get left behind, but we're going to let the big guys kind of figure it out first, right? Like, we're going to let the big brands do the trials and the tests, which we see happening now, right? Doing a lot of the trials and testing of it. And once the price comes down and the use cases are proven out, then we'll get all in. Right now, we're just barely dipping our toe in. What we see AI being used for outside of the big, you know, stuff that you kind of hear about is analytics. So using AI to automate reporting, analytics, to use it. I would love to see it more in predictive analytics, being able to predict demand. We actually have some of that, but being able to predict the demand is something that would help restaurants massively. So we see it being used a lot on the analytics side. And that was the number one, you know, thing that people said they're looking at using it for in 2024. Robotics is pretty low. I think it was 13%.
Yeah, so expensive.
Yeah. And computer vision, I mean, that was in there. And, you know, to your point, dynamic pricing was like the third. The top three were AI-driven analytics, 49% said they're prioritizing that. AI-driven voice ordering, we talked about that for QSRs, 46%. Dynamic pricing, 39%. AI-driven kitchen and production optimization, 27%. And yeah, robotics was at 13%. So obviously QSRs are looking at the voice ordering more, and fast casuals favor the analytics.
You know, I bet you that kitchen number would be higher if people just understood how they can implement it.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think there's anyone. I listened to White Castle talk about this for an hour once, and how smart they were about how they were doing it. And the overall message was just kind of like, have you all heard of the Internet of Things? And everyone's like, yeah. And it's like, that's basically what this is. Because it's not really all that different than just trying to figure out, like, when is this oven going to break? What's the temperature that it's cooking at? So on and so on. And then taking all that data that's being collected and using AI actually to make predictive sense of it.
Right.
Is where it was starting to shift. And so I think if you talk to operators sometimes and you say, yeah, you know, we want to implement AI into your kitchen, they would just be like, what are you even talking about? But if they just understood it was taking kind of these things that have been part of the industry forever and just mm-hmm. making them more consistent and easier and more efficient, to the mm-hmm. earlier word we used. I think that number would be way higher, and it probably will be way higher soon enough. It's just, it's still a little bit of a wild west of like, what is it that you're like, what AI are you buying and where do you put it? Who puts it there and who runs it? And
right.
So once vendors and suppliers and industry people move into positions where they have the ability to start answering these questions, mm-hmm. I think all of this goes up. But the voice automated ordering, that's really easy to understand why and what that is. So it makes your survey data makes sense to me, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well I'm with you. I mean, we were hoping that kitchen and production category would have been higher as well. I mean, we're doubled down on that. And because to your point of order accuracy, right? This is where you're improving order accuracy. This is where you're improving fulfillment speed. That's all in that kitchen and production optimization in our, you know, we call it our kitchen and our product, right? So order accuracy we've seen come up in the survey last year. It was one of our biggest findings was order accuracy needs to improve, particularly for the off-prem orders, significantly lower. So that's a big result of having this, we believe. So yeah, we'll see. You're right though. Maybe people just aren't.
Yeah, I think it's an easy case to make. Yeah. I just don't know that. I just think it scares some people.
Yeah.
I mean, it would scare me. It's not like if someone came to me and said, I want to put AI into your printing system. I would just be like, where? Not that I don't want it. Just don't know what you're talking about.
Right. Well, and that's why we kind of relabel this as tech companies really need to step up and not just drive AI into their products like more seamlessly, but also explain and position. Here's how AI can really help in this with your printer, you know, with your KDS, whatever it is. But we believe the mandate is also on the tech companies to really, you know, incorporate AI. There's so many like free tools now that you can incorporate into your product to make it, you know, easier, less daunting.
Yeah, I think it's always a good position to be in where education is your barrier, not desire for adoption. So, So the last trend here, I think it's a good one to close on, which is just that restaurants are poised to outpace economic projections. So I think that's a really interesting point and probably one that some people would agree with and some would not. kind of depends probably on who you are and how you're doing. But it's like everybody I talk to about the state of the consumer, so to speak, or the economy in general, it's like I get 10 different answers. So I personally have no idea where I stand on that, but interested to hear what you all found.
Okay. Well, I'm a glass half girl, half full girl anyway. So, I mean, our goal here is to encourage restaurants to be more opportunistic this year. Now, we're hearing examples of it. You mentioned Cava. I think they reported 50% growth, you know, revenue growth in Q4, upwards of 50%. I mean, we're hearing use cases where we thought last year Q4 was going to fall off a cliff. Q4 actually outperformed. This year, yes, there are so many things stacked up against us. I mean, the number one business challenge that came through on the survey is the economic volatility. The economic climate is terrifying. Like, you could look at it that way, that it's terrifying globally. In the United States, experts are predicting that fast casual and QSRs will continue to experience 5% year-over-year growth. But I think we should take it a step further. I mean, last year we summarized our report theme as the year of efficiency. This year, the summary that I'm thinking of is it's a year of opportunity and optimization, right? So optimize your business, drive that efficiency a step further, and then take opportunities, take risks. We're seeing restaurants be less risk averse. We're seeing tons of restaurants opening these new prototypes, right? Be creative. Like, be creative in how you're building your restaurant, how you're serving your guests. You know, we talked about the kiosks and all the digital channels. But these smaller footprints, these really cool locations, I mean, Papa John's, they announced in their earnings, their beginning of the year, you know, they're opening hundreds of new locations. So we're seeing it on both ends of the spectrum, to your point, you know, but the student loan thing didn't really, you know, hasn't really, you know, had the impact we thought it would. I mean, I know there's a huge debt, you know, concern, and there are things in the economy that are real concern. But in the United States and in fast casual and QSR, what we're encouraging people to do is get really creative, continue to, you know, double down on what works, and then, you know, take risks to make the experience better for the guests and better for your team members in ways that will help your brand. So, I mean, I kind of threw a lot at you, but some of the data actually this was like a couple steps removed, but some of the data started with what are the top drivers of your digital sales? And when we looked at those drivers, you know, third-party delivery obviously is a big one, and loyalty. But there was a really high percentage of discounting and promotions in there. And we thought, wow, like if you're using a lot of discounting and promotions on top of already probably having lower margins on digital, what would the opportunity be if you could do some, you know, different strategies that weren't discounting and promotions in order to drive your bottom line and top line, right? Like, And then we're seeing too, like the move to platforms, like we're seeing customers add basis points, like more than one basis point by removing like voids and reconciliations, like completely eliminating them with, you know, a platform approach. So there's just so many ways to be driving the revenue and the bottom line that I believe that restaurants are going to start to double down on that. And we've heard about the margin protection too. So,
yes, I agree with you. Here's what I'll say. I think you're going to see headlines about in the next couple months or so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we saw with Wendy's the other day, and I was in consumer media for a while, so I'm not knocking this, but there is a certain panic button that consumer media pushes on purpose sometimes.
Yeah.
I get it. We used to call it the car crash scenario where you would be in the newsroom and you would, you know, we had the police scanner going and you would say, you know, car crash on the corner of whatever. And then
Yeah.
It was like everyone got really excited. I remember thinking to myself one night, what the hell kind of industry is this? but this is how it works, right? It's, you know, you're like, oh, I got to go fill this X inches in the newspaper, and something dramatic happened. Yeah. And so sometimes with the way that internet has allowed this to open up and is so much, you know, more timely, yeah, you over-dramatize things mm-hmm. out of thin air, like Wendy's surge pricing, which they never even said, but because mm-hmm. they were able to equate it to something that made people get antsy, which was, you know, third-party delivery. So, and also taking Uber cabs home and all that fun stuff. But anyway, point of that being, what I think you're going to see in the near term, you saw this in January and February a little bit, is pricing has kind of, you know, in the QSR and fast casual, it's not going to go that much higher unless you're in California. And because of that, you know, you're comping year over year type of things, you're going to, it's going to lag out a little bit, because mm-hmm. if you slow down your pricing and that part of your line isn't growing, you know, you might say you're suddenly like 1% or you're, you know, 3% or you're flat. And the truth is, it's not really a bad result. It's just you had to take into account the fact that you're not adding 6% of price anymore and losing whatever the traffic was and so on. Right. So I do think in the next month or so, you'll have people going like, oh God, sales are so bad. And then hopefully what you don't see is that you don't see people throwing the discounts back into the picture. Mm-hmm. Because they can't add any more price anymore. So then they just start discounting all over the place, and it struggles down to the franchisees who now can't make money anymore and so on and so forth. So my advice to anybody who cares to listen to what I have to say is do not overreact to whatever the top line looks like in the next 3 months. Because I do think, to your point, there are more sustainable options there in the future and at hand for you to actually go grab that isn't just taking price. Mm-hmm. But because there was so much price last year and the year before, mm-hmm. you're just inevitably going to have, quote unquote, a down year, even though it's not mm-hmm. really what it is. So
yeah,
that's my very long-winded take on the future here.
Yeah.
But I think it's more exciting than that, because yeah, you do have these new models and you have all these different ways to engage with a generation of QSR and fast casual diners that simply didn't exist before. So let's look at it that way, the glass half full, to your point.
Right.
I tend to be the opposite type of person. It's what happens when, you know, you grow up in a New York City house.
It's a good compliment, then. We're a good compliment, Danny. Yeah. I'll fill your glass.
Yeah, I need that in life sometimes. So, well, Jen, thank you again so much for joining us. We probably could talk for 3 hours. But before I let you go, though, I just want to give you a chance here to sign off. Maybe say something about where you can download this report. I'll also put the link in the description. But
awesome.
And if anybody wants to learn more about Q and Connect and all those things, what might be a good place for them to do so?
Yeah, just the typical interwebs, right? I mean, I'm on LinkedIn a little bit, but you know, it's qbeyond.com is our website. The report, you'll find it right there. You can link to it off our homepage. You can also just Google Fifth Annual State of Digital. I bet it's gonna come up. just thanks so much for helping us, you know, get the message out. Like I said, this is our fifth year and we went digital this year. So you don't have to fill out a form. It's right there, free for the taking on our website. You can download a PDF of it. And I think you have to put your email in for that, but otherwise it's all right out there. It's free. It's ungated. You know, my hope, my goal, my aspiration is that this will help us all get better, right? Do better this year, help improve, you know, restaurants and help them on the scary journey of digital transformation it's scary for a lot of folks, and embrace the change. I believe that the brands that come out on top will continue to embrace the change and see the opportunities to be had. Yeah. Cause they are plentiful. So
cool.
Anyway,
well, we will do it again next year and we will actually follow through on that. So to my opening point,
God willing and the creek don't rise.
Yeah. Feels like Monday morning over here. But all right, well, thank you, Jen, again. And for everybody out there who's listening, as always, we appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.